different time 25 years ago when New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller promulgated the most extreme drug laws in the United States. Since then, the Rockefeller drug laws have filled the prisons with low-level, nonviolent, and first-time offenders facing mandatory sentences ranging from 15 years to a lifetime. Today, the need for reform is recognized even by politicians, including New York State Attorney General Eliot Spitzer.
I think that we should reform the Rockefeller drug laws. I think there has been agreement by virtually all who study those laws, regardless of where people fall on the political spectrum, that they have not worked.
On Tuesday, March 2nd, thousands of citizens and inmate family members will converge on the state capitol in Albany to roll back the Rockefeller drug laws. Speakers will include Ron Daniels, Al Grandpa Lewis, former New York State Supreme Court Judge Jerome Marks, attorney Margaret Ratner, pardoned former prisoner Anthony Papa, Norman Siegel of the New York Civil Liberties Union, and the Reverend Al Sharpton, among others. Transportation is available with a phone call to area code 212-539-8441. The Rockefeller Drug Law Rally is organized by the William Moses Kunstler Fund for Racial Justice and endorsed by the New York State Criminal Justice Alliance. Call 212-539-8441 for transportation and further information in reversing the Rockefeller drug laws. It's about time.
And it's just about 8 o'clock, 8:01 actually, and you're listening to radio station WBAI. We're surprise. Yes, it's another edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. Couldn't get much worse.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. And unbelievable. I almost didn't make it in today. And once again, it's the government's fault. Yes, that's right. President Clinton was in town. And he decided to take the FDR drive, which happens to be what I took at the exact same moment. And, of course, they have to close the road for some reason. I guess their driving ability is just so bad that if anything happens, they want to make sure nobody else is involved. I don't know. But we're here anyway, and it's kind of a surprise that we are here because we thought for sure that we'd be preempted this week by either the marathon or the impeachment thing, but seems that neither is going on right now, so we're here. And again, we don't know exactly what's going to happen next week, so I guess it pays to be safe. Just assume we'll be here if it's a Tuesday night. And if we're not, well, then you get to be negatively surprised or something along those lines. And speaking of negative surprises, how about this? This out of England, plans for an international network of centers able to tap mobile phones anywhere in Europe have been prepared by European law enforcement agencies. Confidential European Union documents leaked in Germany and obtained by The Observer outline plans for instant access centers across Europe. Sounds so nice and fast foodish, you know? Instant access centers across Europe. And they're equipped to tap every type of communication system, including mobile phones, the internet, fax machines, pagers, and interactive cable television services. Hey, thought you were safe there. Under the plan, InfoPol 98. Well, it was announced last year, okay? European telecommunications companies... Actually, it wasn't really announced. It was planned last year. European telecommunications companies will be required to build tapping connections into their systems. Sound familiar, eh? Sounds like the old digital telephony bill over here. That's a law now. Each EU country's interception interface must be capable of allowing member states to tap communications throughout the EU. Yeah, that means Germany can listen in on France. Something they've always wanted to do. Or, well, you get the picture. All countries can basically go crazy with this. The US, Canada, and Australia are likely to participate in the network, even though we're nowhere near there, giving the FBI and other non-European security agencies access to communications in Europe. Yes, we have a global reach now. InfoPol 98 will be put into operation as part of the new European Convention on Mutual Legal Assistance, which ministers, including Home Secretary Jack Straw and Home Office Minister Kate Hoey, discussed at the EU Justice and Home Affairs Council in Brussels in December. Final details of the convention are likely to be agreed by the Council early this year. By 2000, member states' parliaments would have to ratify it as part of national law. The leaked document was published last week by Telepolis, a German internet magazine. Actually, that would be a few weeks ago. A draft resolution to be sent to ministers after the convention is in force specifies 54 requirements for interception laws. When the council reaches the when the resolution reaches the council, many technical details will have been hidden. According to the latest leaked InfoPol 98 document distributed last month, they will appear in a technical handbook on interception and in accompanying papers. By making new laws in this way, ministers have evaded public scrutiny and even awareness of their plans. National parliaments, as well as the European Parliament and its citizens, are being excluded from the development of legislation that has the most profound implications for civil liberties. That, according to Tony Bunyan, director of the European Civil Liberties Monitoring Organization, Statewatch. Under the InfoPol plan, interception interfaces in telephone exchanges and internet centers must provide real-time, full-time access. Security regulations say interception interfaces must be located in barrier areas with controlled access. Staff would need security clearances and have to comply with national security regulations. It being illegal to reveal how many people were tapped or how monitoring was done. This is one of the scariest articles I've ever read. It's unbelievable. It's hard to imagine we're talking about the free world here. Several tapping centers could listen in at once. Network operators should make provision for implementing a number of simultaneous intercepts. Communication services are increasingly using cryptography to protect the privacy of communications. Gee whiz, I wonder why. If they do, InfoPol says the codes must be broken and information supplied in audible or legible form. The downloading of cryptographic key materials should be immediate, it says, so that an efficient economic and current operation is guaranteed. To make the new tapping system simple and fast to operate, a secret expert group has been developing a tag system that can identify individuals wherever they are. Called the International User Requirements for Interception, or IUR. IUR. Yeah, the data to be passed from country to country include not only names, addresses, and phone numbers, but credit card numbers, PIN codes, email addresses, and computer logon identities and passwords. tapping centers will have to be sent information not only about ordinary phone calls, but also about conference calls, redirected calls, unanswered calls, and even when phones are switched on. Mobile phones will be used to track a target's movements. Law enforcement agencies require information on the most accurate geographical location known to the network for mobile subscribers. The 40-page document admits the new system raises many questions regarding national sovereignty. It's the least of it. And that the interception and interfaces will place heavy costs on companies. It's amazing, that's all they're worried about. All they're worried about are national pride and how much it's going to cost. But it makes no reference to civil liberties and human rights. The document turns civil rights into worthy platitudes, Austrian Green MEP Johann Wagenhuber said. That was in December. And over in England, preliminary drafts of the agreement have not been seen by the House of Commons, but have been reviewed by the House of Lords Committee on the European Community, which has asked for changes to protect individual privacy. Like throwing the whole damn thing out the window. That would be a start. Last February, the committee told the government, the citizen is unlikely to have confidence in any procedure shrouded in secrecy. The existence and framework of international mutual assistance involving interception of telecommunications should be clear and transparent to all. Unbelievable how something like this could come about in secret, how they could actually say that it would be illegal to reveal how many people were tapped or how monitoring was done. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that you see happening around you, slowly, gradually. And you say, something's going to happen to stop it. But it doesn't seem to happen. Oh, maybe you defeat it once, but then it comes back in another form. Or if that doesn't work, they just pass it in secret. At the last minute, you find out about it later, when it's too late. So now we move into the next stage, which is basically, what do we do after this kind of thing starts to happen? It's very hard to imagine, because we've never been here before, and I think we're going to be on the front lines. And I think the first person to be affected will be Isaac.
Me?
Yeah, you.
Oh, I'm just cold and there are wolves after me. This is scary.
It's very scary.
I just got here and I'm now reading this little snippet here. And that's, it has interesting ramifications, to say the least.
Well, what's scary is, you know, that's not coming out of some crazy, subversive, radical, you know, sheet of paper that's, you know, recycled out of something and you know, which only five people in the world read.
Well, this is recycled.
But that wasn't my point. My point is that's mainstream newspaper out of England, and it hasn't even reached this country yet. I haven't seen it on the front page of the Times or on page 56B of the Times or anything like that.
You probably won't.
Probably won't. Why not? Don't they care about these things? What's wrong with them? How could they not care? Yeah, it's Europe. It's not us. But, you know, you could read that thing and I hear the same rationale as I do for various bills coming down in D.C. And it sounds very similar to digital telephony, not quite as ominous. Digital telephony is not quite as ominous in that I didn't hear so many references to things being illegal to even talk about. But, you know, it's been said before and it's been shown before that the FBI and other governmental agencies have power overseas. They actually go over there. They were in Russia once, helping to get encryption banned. And it's kind of like a test ground over there. See how things work. And then move it on over here because, hey, it's the international standard. Well, that's something to fear. Something to worry about. And of course, we always have things to worry about. And One of the major things is, of course, Y2K. Yeah, it's time again for another episode of Y2K Countdown to Doom, where we basically talk about how the world will be destroyed or whatever's going to happen. We don't want to panic people or anything like that. We don't want to say that everyone's going to die and starve to death and shoot each other out of fear and panic, or just not be able to make phone calls or turn on your lights, watch TV, listen to the radio, things like that. We're just here to present the facts as best we know them, and not reveal that we really don't know anything. Because maybe nobody knows anything, and maybe nobody knows where this is going to wind up. We're here to answer your questions and to ask a few of our own of you, because, hey, if you don't know the answers, then we sure as hell don't. Started. The phones have gone out.
Center. Information specialists are ready to assist you from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Informational messages are available to touchtone dialers
820
and are updated frequently. If you're calling from a touchtone phone, please press 1 now. Be told while your call is being reselect from the following options appropriate to your needs. You may make your choice any time during this message. You may also press star at any time to repeat the menu. To find out what the government is doing to fix your 2000 problems, press 1. The President has created a Council on Year 2000 Conversion to assure that all agencies are working hard to fix any internal Year 2000 issues and to make sure that services they provide to citizens, such as veterans benefits, continue uninterrupted. The Council and many agencies also are working with businesses, state and local governments, and foreign governments to assist them in their Year 2000 efforts. You can learn more by visiting the Council's website at www.y2k.gov. To repeat this message, press star. To return to the main menu, press 1. To speak with an information specialist, please press 0.
Transferring to an attendant. One moment, please.
Thank you for calling the Year 2000 Information Center. The center is now closed. The center's normal hours of operation are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. local time. However, informational messages are available 24 hours a day. Press 1 to return to the main menu. Thank you for calling the Year 2000 Information Center. The center is now closed. The center's normal hours of operation are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. local time. However, informational messages are available 24 hours a day.
Not anymore. You know, would it kill them to be open 24 hours a day? I mean, it's only 23 minutes after 8 o'clock. We have questions about Y2K, and all we get are recordings.
Yes, I often wake up late at night.
That's when you're going to have the most problem, the most worries.
Yes.
Well, I like how when you try to find out what the federal government is doing about Y2K, always the first thing on everybody's mind are veterans' benefits. You know, that's the thing. That's the acid test. Are those going to go through, you know, and then everything will be okay.
Well, they get worried about the veterans.
Well, yeah, because they know how to use guns and
precisely,
and they're you know perpetually crabby, and they you know could have a real problem.
Not,
so an awful lot of them because we keep going to wars.
Well, they're not perpetually crabby. It's I don't know. I just like the fact that well, we formed a council on the
we're
issue.
We're
going to
get 25 letters complaining about the fact that we called veterans perpetually crabby.
I didn't say that.
Well, no, but we are going to. All right. Well,
you're going.
I
to.
Will. All right. I'll be the one targeted because I said that, and that proves that they're perpetually crabby. See?
Well,
you see, here, I mean, you're not a veteran, are you?
Oh.
Well, no. It's just somebody coming in the door immediately. I figured they were coming into. You know, to already voice their complaint in person. All right, this is the thing about Y2K, and I will stand up for the record and say this because it's a very unpopular thing to say. I think the whole thing is a crock. There, I've said it. That's my feeling on it. And to prove it, I have two basic arguments here, and people are welcome to dispute me on this. As people have asked me, you know, I've said basic things like this before. They ask me, how do you know? How do you know that the whole Y2K thing is overblown and exaggerated? How do you... Well, the thing is, I don't know. I don't know for sure. Nobody knows for sure exactly what is going to happen. But if you look at the facts, if you just look at things a little bit carefully here, what are we really talking about? We're talking about something having to do with a two-digit date field, 99, switching to 00. Now, I'm going to take out my credit cards here.
Ooh.
Hang on. All right, hands off, hands off. Okay, let's see what we got here. We've got the MasterCard here. Look at this. Look at the expiration date on it. You know, this is really stupid. They don't print the numbers so you can read them. They print them in the same color as the cards. You have to hold them up to the light or feel them with your fingers. Okay, this card became active 0698. It expires 0101. Look at that, 0101.
Yes.
I've used this card. I've used this card, and there have been no complaints, no confusion. So, MasterCard has got the problem licked. All right, I'll be able to make MasterCard purchases. Visa, let's take a look at this Visa card here. This one, 0997, expires 0799. It's possible this Visa company here doesn't yet have a solution. Here's an American Express card. 00/01 is when this one expires. And let's see, another... I have a lot of cards here. How about this one? This is a another Visa card. And this one has an actual date. 12/31/01 is when this one expires. So as you can see, all of these cards seem to have mastered the problem. You know, the dates are showing up. The dates are showing up. Two-digit date fields. I mean, they haven't learned from that lesson, obviously. They haven't expanded to four digits. Okay, they're going to two digits. So, you know, the basic scenario, people not being able to use their credit cards, those failing, I don't think that holds true anymore because, obviously, they have a system. They wouldn't be printing the date out or wouldn't be processing in the computer. Yes, go ahead. Counter that.
I will counter that because back in 96, 97, uh-huh. when these cards were originally issued with 00 dates,
yeah.
There were actual instances of little old ladies going out grocery shopping,
right.
buying like $100-something worth of groceries, swiping their card through the checkout line,
mm-hmm.
and the entire store goes down for a period of 2 or 3 hours simply because they had a credit card with a 00 date on it.
Okay, well, you know, so that might have happened like once.
It happened at least 4 or 5 times.
4 or 5 times in the world of 5 billion people. Okay.
Okay, but...
So it happened.
The fact is that they licked the problem.
Yeah, the other thing is that was the past. That yes. was the past. It's over. It's not going to happen again.
Well, it took them about a month to fix it.
But they fixed it, you see?
Yeah.
The whole thing is they fixed it. Now, you look at other things that happened. You look at, say, the pager network going down last spring, all right? That messed things up for a day. But you know what? We recovered. We got around it. We fixed it. We figured out what was wrong. The Martin Luther King Day crash in 1990 with the phone system, January 15, 1990. You know, that confused a lot of people. Figured out what the problem was. And for a while, nobody knew what the problem was. It was like a virus jumping from one computer to another. And they figured out what the problem was. So here's the thing. We know that the year is going to change. We know that 1999 is going to turn into 2000. It's not like a surprise. If we knew that this was going to happen, but we didn't know when. We didn't know that the year was going to change at a certain date. But, you know, it's the day where everybody congregates and you know, waves the ball coming down in Times Square. That's the signal that we get that, hey, this might happen at midnight. This might happen on January 1st or, you know, thereabouts. It's not going to happen in the year 2003, probably. It's not going to happen in the middle of 2000. It's probably going to happen at the beginning. That's when the signs are going to manifest themselves. And we've had time to prepare. If we didn't have any time to prepare, if suddenly... We figured out, you know, we were a very slow race, and we figured out that 1999 was going to turn into 2000, say, on December 28th, 1999. You know, then I could see a problem that could really, you know, mess things up quite a bit. Because we've had time to prepare for this, and a lot of time, really. I mean, I don't know what those people making computers in the 60s were thinking, but we've had a lot of time. You know, in the 80s and the 90s, we really should have been thinking about this. So if something does happen, we really don't have very many people to blame but ourselves.
Yes.
But I really don't think that much is going to happen.
Well, it's just going to be a number of interesting inconveniences.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, you hear me talk about nuclear conflict and social unrest, but those are fun things to think
about.
Well,
yeah, you know, and you have to wonder, you know, so many people are talking about this, but these are also people, and I'm generalizing here because I'm listening to people who are speaking the loudest. These are people that are always talking about that kind of thing.
Yes.
They're always talking about civil unrest and nuclear, you know, war and you know, having to stockpile things and take up arms and that kind of thing. And this is another instance. It's like, you know, the Nostradamus people who point to every, you know, red light as prophecy. You know, every don't walk sign means that Nostradamus predicted this was going to happen. And, you know, here's something that, you know, sure looks like something massive is going to happen. And no matter what, whether it's just, you know, a lot of people getting drunk on December 31st or you know, the whole world falling apart, they can point to that, to a prophecy somewhere and say, yeah, this was destined to be.
Yeah, well, it's a complicated issue. I mean, you mentioned a slow race. Well, slow race isn't a race of people as opposed mm-hmm. to, you know, a tortoise and running down a track. The credit card problem was fixed simply because the credit card companies were losing money and the grocery stores were going to sue.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided, maybe we should get some people on this, whereas the government is busy forming councils, like we heard.
Right. So we could probably say that most most profit-making companies have figured out a way around this or have designed new systems that it's not an issue.
Oh, Citibank and Chase are going nuts, like stamping Y2K on pieces of hardware.
Now, that's the other thing. That's the other thing, and it really kind of annoys me here. I got a Y2K compliant notice in the mail for my postage meter.
Oh, that's nice.
No, it's not nice. It's stupid. My postage meter. Think about it. It's a machine that stamps 33 cents on an envelope, all right? And you set the date.
Yeah.
Now, come on. Y2K compliant? I mean, yeah, the little wheel will turn around and I can move it to 00. I needed some guy in the Pitney Bowes office to tell me that was going to happen, you know? And the other thing is just, I got two of these. The other thing is a scale, something I put something on and it weighs it. I mean, that doesn't even have to know the year, the date, or anything. So you have people going around stamping Y2K compliant on water fountains, thinking that they're doing something and probably getting paid for doing it, which leads me to my third and final point, and that is that when you look at everybody running around saying Y2K is a big deal and we have to do this, we have to do that, these people are making money saying that. They have something to gain from it. The people who are offering Y2K solutions, and, you know, some of the Y2K solutions are, of course, necessary. I'm not disputing that. I just think it's, it's something that will be accomplished. But all the other people that are basically selling the panic scenario, ask them, well, what do you suggest? Well, I happen to have this full line of books to guide you through the impending crisis of doom over the next millennium, or whatever, you know, a special type of heat-sinking missile that will find bureaucrats or whatnot. And
I got one of those anyway.
I'd like to know, how do you make money from believing that Y2K is not going to be a problem, all right? How do you do that?
How do you make money saying it doesn't exist?
I want to cash in on the, you know, on being calm during Y2K. How do I do that? See, the mere fact that you can't do that should indicate that I'm being sincere here. I've got nothing to sell, you know? There's no possible way I can profit or benefit in any way by saying what I'm saying here today. No way.
Well, you could release
this. Can I cash in on this somehow? Well, can I bet somewhere in Las Vegas that nothing is going to happen and win?
Actually, there are odds in Vegas for different systems going down and things.
Uh-huh. But what about staying
up? They bet
on
everything.
Are there any odds for the system staying up?
Well, you might have something there. I just say you get a bunch of people and you release like a CD full of like Kumbaya, Y2K is never going to happen, and it'll sell. Simply because people buy that kind of stuff.
Well, here's what I'm going to do. Tomorrow morning, I am going to go down to the patent office and trademark my idea.
Which is?
That nothing's going to happen in Y2K because nobody has said that yet. Nobody thinks it's an overblown big deal.
People who've been saying
No, nobody has come out in public and said that they think January 1st, 2000 is going to come and nothing significant is going to happen. So I want, when that happens, I want that to be my idea that's not going to happen.
Well, I'd gotten a piece of email before from a gentleman who constructs nuclear reactor simulators so that you can train the people who are sitting there making your power on nuclear reactors. And he basically builds the things, and he was telling me that, we're probably not going to have a problem because we don't use this, that, and the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's being fairly vehement about this, and I said, well, what about this little component in there? And he goes, well, we never checked that out. Of course, an email is just simply it's been delayed about an hour or two in response after a fairly
the thing is, like I said, it's not something that's unpredictable. You know that the year is coming. You can test things.
Yes.
Yeah, there are lots of components that something may have a date in it that you're not aware of, and you won't know until the day comes that it's going to fail or something unpredictable is going to happen, which is why you test things to see what happens.
Are people being responsible enough to do it? And in some cases they are, in some cases they aren't.
And in the case of my postage meter, they're certainly not, because they went to the trouble of printing up all these things and sending me a note saying that my mechanical piece of machinery is not going to have a problem like I ever thought it was.
Well,
I'm going to ask about everything that I own. My bicycle, is that Y2K compliant? I want the manufacturer to tell me that it is. You know, everything. Your dishwasher, your forks, your knives, everything. There could be a big problem here. That's what they're cashing in on.
You own a business?
Fear. Well, why?
Is it insured?
My insurance company has four-digit dates, so I
okay.
First thing I checked.
Because a friend of mine recently received a letter from his insurance company stating rather plainly that your policy excludes Y2K resultant losses
and
damages.
That's just great. That's the kind of confidence
we
need.
This is somebody who basically has been going along the same lines as you have, and he just kind of got this in the mail and goes, oh, geez. Remember what you were telling me about those cash registers? You want to tell that to me again?
I would say that's an indication to change insurance companies, you know, because they don't have much confidence in a lot of things. They don't know what's going on. I'm sure there are insurance companies that will guarantee anything Y2K related.
Well, that's true. Well, yeah. It's going to be an interesting time. I'm still planning on being on vacation at that point.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. You know, and I don't want to get the impression. I don't want to give the wrong impression here. That I abhor chaos, because I don't. I embrace it. You know, I look forward to things unpredictable. I love hurricanes, okay? I love tornadoes. And well, I don't really love tornadoes. I've never actually seen a tornado, and I know they do devastating damage. But I just like the idea of chaos and you know, Mother Nature and all that kind of thing. But also computer disasters are kind of interesting. You know, not necessarily deliberate ones, but just unpredictable ones. And that's the thing.
You're the kind of guy who watches NASCAR for the crashes.
No, I don't even like that. But you have to know, you have to realize that computers can fail. And if there's anything good that's going to come out of that, it's people are going to think that way and have adequate backups.
Yes, well, Windows 95 users already know that computers fail fairly regularly.
Which is probably the best thing that Bill Gates has ever taught anybody. but the point is that people have become so dependent on these things. For every aspect of their lives, they do not know how to exist without them.
Yes.
And that's something, that's a very valuable thing that you need to know. You need to know how to survive without high technology. And that's also why people react so vehemently against hackers, because in their curiosity and in their probing around and getting into places they're not supposed to get into, hackers kind of remind us that, hey, the whole thing could fall apart very easily, because it's really not constructed all that well. You know, we're kind of new at this, and we haven't learned everything. And we've put an awful lot of trust into the system. And if it fell apart, well, gosh, where would we be? And that's a very good question to ask. I don't think Y2K is the right reason to ask it, but I think it brings out the right question. Where would you be without high technology, and can you survive? Because things do fail, and you never know why.
You're probably going to find a lot of communities coming together in the event that, you know, their power goes out or something like that.
Yeah, happens. Survivalists have been embracing the hackers.
Well, survivalists, besides that, I'm talking about, like, you know, the citizens of Levittown stepping out of their little grid houses.
That hasn't happened since 1963.
Right, and, you know, basically going next door and maybe actually playing bridge with somebody down the block.
But yeah, that's what we've been aiming for the last 40 years, to get them out to play bridge.
My point is it'll probably bring out a stronger sense of community that together we can probably pull through this.
I do remember Hurricane Gloria.
Oh, yeah.
When that hit us really hard, and we all went out and met our neighbors and chopped wood and helped people out.
Exactly.
Haven't said a word to them since, but it was a nice day, and we did get some exercise.
But you remember that, and that's what's important.
I remember that, yes. I remember lots of things. Now, this is something you're going to remember for a while. This is the Bell Atlantic thing that came in this month's phone bill. I'm not sure if people in Manhattan got it yet, but people on Long Island certainly did. It's basically a little blurb about the wonders of three-way calling.
Ooh.
Yeah, give it back to me for a second. I want to read something here. It's a little pamphlet that says, "Get it straight with three-way calling from Bell Atlantic." Folks, this is a scam. Yes, this is a scam from Bell Atlantic, and in fact, it's a scam that's being perpetrated by companies throughout the United States, by phone companies throughout the United States. Three-way calling in three steps. While you're talking to Joe, quickly press your phone's recall feature, the hook, recall button, or flash key, whatever you want to call it. Listen for three short tones and a dial tone, then call Jane. After Jane picks up, press the recall feature again. Now you, Joe, and Jane can talk. How about that? Yes. Now, here's the thing. This is the scam part. They've put it on your phone line, most likely. You know, in Long Island, I think everybody has it. I'm not sure about 718 and 212, but they're probably going to do it soon if they haven't done it already. Everybody has it on their phone line. What a wondrous thing. How nice of Bell Atlantic to do this. But here's the bad thing. Three-way calling costs 75 cents per use. 75 cents plus the usual charge for local, regional, toll, or long-distance calls. Now, okay, so just don't use it then. Well, that's the thing. Have you ever hung up a phone and then picked it up again to make another phone call? Well, you can't do that anymore. You can't do that anymore because Bell Atlantic has put this little feature on your phone where if you pick up within a second, You'll get a stutter dial tone, which may not register in your head that that's actually a cash register going off for 75 cents. But it means that you're making a three-way call. And there is a safety feature to avoid this kind of thing. All right, you ready for the safety feature?
Count sheep?
No. Trying to see exactly. Yeah, here we go. Important. A little exclamation point. Circle there. Important. Please wait 3 seconds after every call. Whether it's a three-way call or not, your telephone line needs to reset itself after each call. It needs to reset.
So wait a second. Back in 1980-something, when I first picked up a phone...
It didn't need to reset itself,
but now that we've progressed...
It's new high technology. It's the new high technology that...
It has a refresh. It
needs to reset, yes. Okay. It's like when they cut over to a DMS-100 out by me, and you could still hear the MF tones whenever it connected. And they said... They knew about this. It was a defect in the switch, apparently. They didn't shield that noise. They said, you'll hear special tones when you make a phone call now. That's the sound of our new technology at work.
They actually said that.
They said that. I have the pamphlet someplace.
Really?
Yeah. So
I'd like to see that. Just
but in this particular case, they're making money off the lack of technology. Or actually, I don't think it's a lack of technology. I think it's a lack of morals. So 75 cents every... Unless you subscribe, of course. If you subscribe to three-way calling, then you don't have to worry. It's $4.15 a month, which they could get off everybody.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Or more if you're a business. You can have it taken off, but you have to call them. You have to call them to have it taken off. It's really not nice. Okay, we also have... Federal charges increasing for additional lines. Starting on January 1st, there was an increase in the federal subscriber line charge for residential customers who have multiple telephone lines. If you have additional lines billed to the same name and address as your primary line, the federal subscriber line charge will increase from $5 to approximately $6.07 per month.
Really?
If you have additional lines billed to a different name at the same address, the federal subscriber line charge will increase from $3.50 to approximately $6.07 per month for each additional line. And the federal subscriber line charge also will increase from $5 to approximately $6.07 per month for residential ISDN customers. And the federal subscriber line charge remains the same, $3.50 a month for primary and single residential customers. It's ridiculous because this is basically a charge for no new service or anything like that. It's just... attacks.
Well, they flat rated the multiple line charges. You can't pull the scam of I now spell my name with an S instead of a Z.
What you can do, though, and this is something I thought of as I was trying to figure out a counter scam to this scam, if you have additional lines billed to a different name at the same address, they still get you for that.
Right.
So you can't make another name, but you can make another address. So you have apartment number, you know, you live in a house and you're apartment
A,
1,
B.
Apartment 2, apartment 3. Or, you know, if you're in an apartment, I guess there's got to be a way around this, 4L-A, 4L-B, you know, whatever. There's got to be a way to do it. And in most places, there's more than one way to say the same address.
Actually, that may very well work, simply because the only way they check for that is database comparison.
That's right. So, you know, we have to fight back in whatever way we can. These charges are getting ridiculous. But if you look at your phone bill now, the amount of charges on there before you even pick up the phone, it's just unbelievable. It's incredible.
Well, who's
federal, state, local, emergency 911, you know, all this garbage.
The FCC imposes the federal tax?
The FCC, they say FCC tax, but it's not the FCC that's getting the money. The FCC simply says there has to be this kind of a fee for the long-distance companies to get access to the local company lines, et cetera, and all these different fees, and the phone companies just pass it on.
Okay. Who do I yell at if I want that lowered?
Well, Bell Atlantic doesn't want you to yell at them. They say Bell Atlantic does not receive any new income from these increases. And if you want recorded information... Okay, let's get recorded information real quick, and then we'll take some phone calls. Dial tone, please. Okay. 1-800-322-3884.
I'm sorry, your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and try your call again or ask your operator for assistance. Thank you.
Okay, that should answer all your questions.
Thank you. I'm
take another, take some phone calls now. That was the number. I called it. I called the right number.
I'm sure you did.
You want to do it again? Okay.
No,
again.
I believe
I'll do it again.
You.
I'll do it again.
I believe you.
1-800-322-3884. See, it's the same ring.
Thank you for calling Bell Atlantic
All right,
Information Line. This month's message focuses on the federal subscriber line charge and recent changes in rates for residence customers who have additional phone lines or multiple accounts. The subscriber line charge is a mandated monthly fee on your phone bill. It was set in place by the Federal Communications Commission 15 years ago to cover part of the cost of connecting long-distance calls to the local telephone network. Currently, the subscriber line charge is $3.50 per month for a primary line and $5 per month for each additional line. Beginning January 1, 1999, if you are a resident customer who has additional phone lines or multiple accounts at the same service address, such as your home, apartment, or dorm room, you will see an increase in the federal subscriber line charge. Under new guidelines, there can only be one primary phone line or account for a service address. A primary line is the first phone installation of record at a service address. Same name at the same service address. You might even have a separate bill with the same name at the same address. Beginning January, the federal subscriber line charge for the second line will increase from the current $5 to approximately $6 per month. The subscriber line charge for the primary line will remain $3.50 per month. Now, let's say you have two or more phone lines billed to different names at the same service address. This may be the case if a husband, wife, child, in-law, or roommate has a separate phone account at the same address. Beginning January, under the new rules, only the first telephone line installed at the service address is considered a primary line. This means that for each additional telephone line or account billed to the same service address, regardless of billing name, the monthly subscriber line charge will increase from $3.50 to approximately $6. Finally, if you have an ISDN line, the subscriber line charge will increase from $5 to approximately $6 per month. An ISDN line is a special connection that enables high-speed digital access and transfer of voice, data, and image. The subscriber line charge increased for additional lines is part of government efforts to lower access charges that long-distance companies pay local telephone companies to complete a call. Any increases in subscriber line charges are offset by corresponding reductions in access charges paid by long-distance companies. Because long-distance companies now pay less in access charges, consumers should begin to see a reduction in the cost of their long-distance calls. Bell Atlantic does not receive any new revenue from the increase in the federal subscriber line charge. Thank you for calling Bell Atlantic.
Yeah, okay, that's just great. You know, what if you don't make any... What if you don't make any long... Go away. What if you don't make any long-distance phone calls, you know? Then you don't get much of a savings, do you?
Not really, no.
So
I'm
basically,
sorry I asked.
What they're saying is that, you know, this is because you're paying 9 cents a minute or 10 cents a minute for long distance, this is the chickens coming home to roost here.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of long distance, I got a $25 check today from AT&T.
Really?
Isn't that nice? Yeah. Sent me. What would you like to do with this $25 check?
Out of the goodness of their heart?
Cash it. Do whatever you want with it. And also, start enjoying 5-cent weekends.
Hey.
Now, here's the thing. You got to look carefully for this. But if you cash this check, they automatically switch your long-distance service and your local service, your local toll service to AT&T. And friends, let me tell you, that will be the biggest mistake you ever make in your life because AT&T rates are far higher than local Bell operating company rates. So that $25 will soon disappear. All right, let's take some phone calls in the time we have left.
So it's like an Ed McMahon check.
Pick a number from 1 to 12.
7.
Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, it's Che Guevara.
How you doing?
I was just
wait a minute. The guerrilla leader from Cuba?
Wow, no.
What'd they do to you?
They resurrected me from the dead.
Wow. Okay. Well, what's going on down there?
What's up with 2600 Productions?
What you mean by that is the film that we are making. Well, let me tell you, actually, it's some interesting developments on that. We finished going through the all the footage, all 100 hours or so. There's still a little bit, actually, there's still a lot we have to film, including how this whole thing ends, and that won't be happening till April. But since we are now actually piecing it together, we're on the verge of doing the editing, and that means we have to figure out what kind of editing system to get, what kind of computer to get to do the editing. Right now we're thinking along the lines of those like groovy looking G3 things that they just came out with, and either something like a Media 100 system or an Avid system. And again, anyone who has any kind of insight into that kind of thing, or even connections on how to get one cheap or even for nothing, just mail us. Mail us at film@2600.com. That's F-I-L-M, and that's the film project. Does that answer your question?
MacMall.com. They offer it cheap. Uh-huh. Also, just so everybody knows, Telefreak did not steal HNN's layout. All right?
Okay. That's something that's been... That's been on the minds of everybody. It has.
Who?
You don't watch TV, do you?
No, I don't.
Good evening. You're on the air. Oh, we have music.
That's rather
Our
nice.
Callers have music on hold, isn't that? They put us on
We're
hold.
On hold.
Now.
How do you pay?
It's nice.
We've
music,
only
too.
Got it. We've only got 8 minutes left in the show.
Well, it's a lot more pleasant than that hardcore music they play when you call certain phone companies. You know?
Well, that's scary.
Good evening. You're on the air. It's again music
hey.
On hold.
I like it.
Yeah. Well, this person has at least two... You know, it's like a phone company is calling us. You know, that's what it is. They must be calling us saying, would you like to switch to this phone company? Good evening. You're on the air. Yeah, that's what's happening, all right. They seem to be going... Because I'm going down the dial. I'm going down the numbers here.
Uh-huh.
So I can guarantee you this one here is not them because this one just lit up. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, hello?
Hi. See, you're not music.
Hi, yes. I'm calling from a car phone.
Uh-huh.
Hey. I have a PC at home.
Uh-huh.
And it's a gateway PC. I use Windows 95, and I have, about 2 weeks ago, I went to my trusty PC, and I was going to look at my email, and when I got on, MSN sort of gave me this message that I must upgrade. It is time to upgrade. I had no choice.
Really?
And 40 minutes after the upgrade, my email was disabled. And lately, the last couple of days, well, I haven't had emails since. In the last couple of days, I'm getting weird messages like there's not enough memory.
The new upgrade of MSN has a subversive locator. So if you are a subversive, it will disable your account.
Oh.
Yeah. No, actually, what are the symptoms? I mean, besides not being able to read your mail, what does it say? What kind
I
of
can't get on the internet at all now. It says the manager. What is it? The something I never heard of before. The call manager or something. It can't access the system. There's not enough memory. Something's not configured. I can't believe it. I mean, I can't get online at all now. I mean, I have no idea what happened.
Well, something isn't set up right. Without actually seeing your layout, it would be very hard for me to say exactly what it is.
I mean, is it possible that they upgraded this without running any test data or anything? And
most likely, it's just that the program that they gave you as a quote unquote upgrade,
right,
just has requirements beyond what your machine is capable of.
You may have upgraded beyond your reach.
Yeah.
Amazing. I mean, it's a Pentium. It's a Windows 95.
And yeah.
What have they done to me?
Well, it's Microsoft. You never know what the heck they're up to.
But you know, it's MSN. There's plenty of other things that you can go to access the net. So just make sure you fire off a nice letter to MSN explaining why you switched. Thanks for calling. Let's go over here now. Good evening. You're on the air.
Emmanuel.
How you doing? Hey, this is a voice from the past. Where have you been?
Well, I left you that message at 2600 on your voicemail system, which doesn't even acknowledge Emmanuel Goldstein, saying that at the time a few months ago you said you only wanted new callers. I thought I was...
Well, now you're a new caller again.
Yeah, I thought I was one of the people besides Rebel who was on your S list, but it's good to be back. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. What's on your mind?
I'm sane tonight, too. I wanted to ask you something someone told me about the area codes for 212 and 718 changing in July or something, and you must dial all 11 digits even within your own area code.
That's correct. And let me very quickly explain that because we are pretty much out of time. And basically, coming, I believe it's July, I'm not exactly sure when, the cutover will be. But 646 will be split with 212, and that basically means that all new phone numbers will have a 646 area code instead of 212. In Brooklyn, Queens, and the Bronx, the same thing is going to happen, except 718 will split into 347. I'm not entirely certain yet whether 10-digit dialing will be required for all calls, including calls within your own area code. That has happened in Philadelphia. It's happened in many other parts. Actually, I don't know if it's happened in many other parts, but it is happening increasingly in different parts of the country. It's a royal pain. It's basically turning everything into a 10-digit phone number. And to console you, they say you don't have to dial the 1. Big deal. But you still have to dial the 1 to get out of the area, so it's just going to confuse everybody. That's the news as far as that goes. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. We're out of here. I have to end tonight on kind of a sad note. Former staffer here at WBAI, known as Honest Tom Pompicello, passed away last week. He was one of the first people I actually worked with at this radio station about 10 years ago. He did a blues show, and I was fortunate enough to be the engineer for that. In addition to the blues show that he did here in WBAI, Tom Pompicello was an activist who also did all kinds of musical things, New York, Long Island, various other places. And he also worked for Viacom. He made animation for MTV and did all kinds of bumpers and themes and things like that. In fact, more recently, he did the theme song for TV Land, which is one of the newer networks. So I'd like to close the show tonight by playing one of the pieces from a CD he gave me 10 years ago that has a whole bunch of things from MTV, and this is one of the themes for one of the cartoons on MTV, and we'll do this in memory of Tom Pompicello. Until next week, hopefully we'll be back next week. This is Emmanuel Goldstein for Isaac and Off the Hook. Have a good night.
You're watching MTV Primetime, where 75 people with joysticks have the power over what 40 million people will see on TV tonight. Think that's a crock? Okay, tell me what you want to see first on tonight's show. Punch 1 if you want to see our special guest. 2 if you want to see the video dominatrix. 3 for Geek of the Week. And 4 if you want to see me pull the skin off my face. What? I can't? Okay, forget that. You guys punch your things, and we'll be right back.
February 2nd edition of City in Exile, Ken Gale and I, Ed Menge, will be talking with Mark West, professor of children's literature.